if you close your eyes.
Welcome back, everyone. It's All Talk No Bock. We're back after a brief hiatus, Charles, and we're excited. I'm your co-host, Heather.
I'm your co-host, Charles. It's going to be great. Heather, we got opening day yesterday. We're recording on a beautiful Friday, and we got a lot to talk about.
Yes, unfortunately, we can't talk about every team's opening day because we're recording Friday morning, but we will have a lot to talk about next week. So don't worry for fans of any other team besides the four that played yesterday. We will get to you guys. But we wanted to start out today with a little bit of a different segment. Rather than a player profile, we wanted to kind of touch on, again, we sort of touched on this last episode, we wanted to touch on the players kneeling during the national anthem and just the general recognition of Black Lives Matter. We saw, and Charles will talk about the Giants, who have done so much great work this past week, as I hate to say it. But we saw, you know, players warming up with Black Lives Matter t-shirts on. We saw them kneel in some cases or put their hands on people that were kneeling in sort of an allyship. We saw, I think Morgan Freeman even made a statement. I wasn't watching
the game. Yeah, he made a statement. Yeah.
So that was cool. And so we just want to, you know, say that it's so important, you know, for the movement to not just die out, you know, or be like a thing. As LeBron James said in an interview yesterday, it's not a movement, it's a lifestyle for these players and for people around this country. So we really like to see players come together in this way. And Charles will talk about all the good work that the Giants have done on this front and others. Go ahead, Charles.
Yeah, seeing what the Giants have done, you know, manager Gabe Kaplan has been very open to these players, respecting their decision whether they want to go out and kneel or not. Even the players that aren't kneeling, they still wear the shirts and they still are very much advocates on social media. And as you saw yesterday, Heather, and you mentioned a little bit, you know, we saw the Black Lives Matter BLM logo on the back of mounds, you know, during the Dodger game and out in center field, and especially as well during the Yankees Nationals game, which we will also get into. But these guys, I mean, it's awesome to see what Kaplan is doing and to see that they're really respecting the message. And, you know, the death of George Floyd really made an impact, not just on, you know, having these conversations, but continuing them, especially, you know, for these pro athletes who have such an amazing platform, an amazing opportunity to continue to spread these messages and to really advocate for change. It's something that's really special, and it's something that can only really happen in this day and age with social media and the amount of press and the availability that we have to get the word of mouth out. I mean, a person like LeBron James can share to millions of followers in a matter of seconds. That's the amount of impact that he has. So it's really key to see that these athletes, especially in the MLB, where we've had a lot of scandal recently, come out on the right side of this, you know, issue. And I think that, you know, the Giants have also been doing an amazing job with hiring, you know, the first on-field female coach to coach first and third base. Alyssa Nacken on Monday night became the first woman during summer camp to coach in an on-field capacity during a major league game. I say that because in 2014 or 12, there was another female who had coached, but she was inside of the dugout. This was the first female coach out on the field. She replaced Antoine Richardson in the late innings during the late stages of the Athletics game. And, you know, her story is awesome. She came out of Sacramento State, a three-time all-conference softball player, so she loves the sport already. She went to the University of San Francisco for management and, you know, joined the team in 2015 and now has worked from, you know, a sports management position to become, you know, in 2014, she started as an intern in the baseball operations department. And now she's on, you know, the field next to the chalk, next to all the players. And it's just an amazing sight to see. And her journey has really been something that can inspire the next generation of female reporters, female coaches, female umpires, anything, you name it. I mean, it needs to be, we talk about, you know, only 8% of the MLB has African Americans in the sport. I would love to know the percentage of women in the sport, because I'm sure it's even lower. So it'd be interesting to see what happens in the next couple of years. I hope more organizations and the MLB continues to get it right.
Yeah, you know, thank you for mentioning that, Charles. I look up to many females in the sport of baseball, particularly reporters, but it's so refreshing to see a coach on the field and it be normalized. You know, we talk about walking the walk and not just talking the talk. And we see the Giants doing that. And again, as much as I hate to give them credit for anything, and as much as it pains me, they are doing such a great thing. And no, you know, it's no surprise because they're in San Francisco, which is a very liberal city in this country. But also it should be normalized in all 30 teams, in my opinion. I hope that, you know, it seems like with the people in the organization, they just treat her as, you know, it's not a special thing. She earned the role as anybody would. And that's the important part, that it's not like, she's not like the trophy or the, you know.
The diversity. Right, yeah. It wasn't a diversity thing. I totally agree. And right. Speaking of, you know, big moves made.
Let's do it.
There's 12 reasons why Mookie needs to stay now as an extension. 12 years, 365 reasons, I should say, $365 million for an extension of 12 years on top of his one-year deal that he just signed, making him the highest-paid player in the sport. And the Dodgers, you know, as you'll go into, he didn't show up last night, but, you know, he's getting all of his kinks out. He's in a new team, new environment, as I'm sure, you know, you're going to attest to. And I think that this is just a big, big extension for the Dodgers. They really needed this. It really gives them not just Bellinger, but Mookie. It sets them apart with Betts, the Killer Bees now taking over for the Steelers. It's now on the Dodgers. We got the new Killer Bees in town. We just need one more to really perfect the trio. So we'll see if we could get it. They could get another B in there to accommodate. But it's going to be awesome to see, you know, what that means for them. And they have a lot of money left over, as you know. What about the money?
Right. You know, first of all, they have Walker Buehler. So there's your Killer Bees right there. Second of all,
I was thinking a hitter. I was thinking we got to have like three in a row in the lineup for the Killer Bees. But go ahead.
A lot of people will say, oh, they threw money at a guy. Untrue. This guy's probably the second best hitter in the whole game. And he has so many defensive and speed assets that we don't even talk about as much. And we saw it yesterday with his very clutch save call at third. Third to home.
Whoa.
It wasn't. He was safe. His left hand was in. His left hand was in!
It was close. Come on. It was fine. Right there. They had to review it. That means it was close.
Fine. But it was a clutch move and great base running, as we've seen his whole career. Yeah, you know, they're so set up well. In the Andrew Friedman era, they've struggled to get that big guy, that franchise player. They've just depended on the draft mostly, which is surprising for a big franchise in a big market like LA. But Andrew Friedman, he did it. Dodger fans can stop complaining about him. He did his job. He signed a great guy. He's a great asset and a great addition to the outfield, even moving Cody to center field looked good yesterday. And I think it'll work out great for years to come. He's only 27. We forget sometimes that he's so young, a relative. So he'll still be in his 30s.
39 by the end. It's pretty old, but I think you're getting his prime time. So it's worth it.
We're getting his prime, and we're, with the health and different technology now, players can last longer, as we know. So I don't think it's, you know, right now Rich Hill, I think, is 39. So we're seeing it that they're playing later into their lives. And I'm excited for them. I'm excited for the team. I hope they bring home a couple rings and we get greedy, not just one. So but I'm looking for the one right now.
Opening day, though, how'd they do yesterday?
They did great. It wasn't a my kind of game. I'd like those 8 runs to come a little earlier so I'm not sweating so much. But yes, they eventually got those 8 runs. They woke up, which is great to see. They pounced on a Giants bullpen that has, in recent years, actually been decent. So that was interesting to see. The game was all around good. There were some good defensive plays by Kike Hernandez, but he is the name of the game yesterday. Wow. 4 for 5. With I believe 5 RBIs, and that's amazing. The Dustin May came in with 48 hours notice. He's only 22 years old when Kershaw went on the injured list, and he pitched phenomenally and kept them in the game when they needed it the most in those earlier innings, and that was huge as well. But there was another game. It was Yankees Nationals, unfortunately rained out, but we did see a technical complete game.
Yes, we did. And Yanks get the win in, you know, five and a half innings, almost 6 innings. And it's interesting. We're playing basically a farm little league game here, or even, you know, a shortened high school game where we're calling it at 6 innings because of the lights or, you know, anything like that. But this time it was because of the rain, unfortunately. And man, was it a downpour yesterday? It was crazy. They had to stop that game. It looked biblical, especially during this coronavirus season. It was just another sign. It was like, oh my goodness, will this ever end? But 4-1 Yankees, the first home run and the first run of the year came from Giancarlo Stanton. He actually brought in Judge. So I guess technically Judge was the first run of the year and Stanton was the first home run. Judge got the first hit of the 2020 campaign for the Yankees and for the MLB. And Gerrit Cole pitching, you know, 5 innings, looking very hot, very much worth the money. He only allowed 1 hit, 1 earned run. It was on a jack to Adam Eaton, you know, so you take away that hit and he's perfect for the afternoon. So definitely worth the money. And on the national side, you know, it was good to see them get on the board. They put up a run. Obviously, you know, Scherzer didn't look as hot in his start as he wanted, but he still got 11 strikeouts, which was pretty solid, but 4 walks. You know, he was kind of all over the place, and he couldn't really find his rhythm, which I'm sure is tough when you are used to playing earlier in May or early to late April.
Sure.
It's going to be challenging for someone like that, and it's a little bleak right now for a Nationals team who's trying to come back in a shortened season and get back to a championship. So we'll see what happens, but good win for the Yankees. Stanton showed up and he drove in the most RBIs for the team and for the game yesterday. So good game. And it's going to be interesting to see what today brings. Heather, I wish we could cover some more games, but that's all we have for today. You know, it was 2 games yesterday and it was great to see baseball back. I love it. It's awesome. And it was sad to see that Juan Soto couldn't play yesterday, another victim falling to COVID-19. So our thoughts and prayers are out to him. And we hope to see a full Yankee, full Nationals game here soon. But if you close your eyes. Welcome back to All Talk No Balk. It's time for our favorite segment and yours. It's your take, our take. We got a very special topic today. We're going to be debating the best matchups of 2020, also possible rivalries for the future. I'm going to be covering the Tampa Bay Rays and debating Ben Borkinski down below me, who's going to be covering the Boston Red Sox. Heather Barrett is going to be our, of course, resident Dodger fan covering the Dodgers. And Sebastian Moore down the bottom left is going to be debating her covering the New York Yankees. It's going to be a great debate, and we hope you stick around for the whole thing. Let's get right into it. Ben, what do you got on the Red Sox?
Wait, let me start the timer first, everyone.
Right, that's right. We also have 3 minutes that we're going to be doing. for each contestant, a little over, maybe 3 minutes and 30 seconds if they want to get one more point in, but it's got to be concise, to the point, and you guys can let us know who won down in the comments below.
I'll give you guys 3 minutes, 15 seconds. So, and I'll give you a warning when you're at 3 minutes to finish up. How about that?
I'll try to use all of that time if I can.
The timer's fair, everyone. So this is fair timer. Okay.
Let's do it. Come on.
All righty. So we're going to start off with Ben over here. So Ben, your time starts now. Tell us why the Red Sox are the team to fear in the AL East.
Yeah. So, I think that the Red Sox have a very good chance of making the playoffs, especially with this new format that was posted yesterday. I think it gives them a lot better chance because obviously you've got the Yankees to deal with in the division. I think there's pretty safe to say they're going to be very tough to beat. So really it's between the Rays and the Red Sox. And yes, Blue Jays maybe, but we'll just focus on Rays, Red Sox for now. And I'm pretty confident that the Red Sox will be the best of the two teams this season for many reasons. First off, I would say just from an offensive perspective, the team is very, very talented, as shown from sprouting players last year like Rafael Devers and Xander Bogaerts. Both of them became very strong on offense, and also Christian Vasquez proved that he is not just a defensive player, just being catcher. He is now like in the lineup and probably going to be batting sixth for the season. And you've got stellar hitters on the team like JD Martinez and Mitch Moreland, who can provide some serious power. So definitely strong players on the Red Sox. And you've got Alex Verdugo, who's got a lot of upside. So that's very important. Obviously missing a very key player who was traded to a team that did very well yesterday and is probably going to do very well this season. But who knows, maybe Verdugo will be able to provide some offense in right field for sure. Defensively, the team is very strong too. That outfield, yes, we are missing that very good player. But left field, Ben Tendi is still very strong. Jackie Bradley Jr., I think, is the best center fielder in baseball. And right field, we'll see. But even in the infield, you've got Rafael Devers, who improved from last year. Christian Vasquez has already been very good. And Xander Bogaerts, who also improved. So you've got some serious infield power there with regards to defense. The big question mark is the pitching. We've got in the starting rotation from 2019, four of the five are currently not playing right now. You've got Chris Sale, who is undergoing Tommy John surgery. You've got David Price, who got traded. You've got Rick Porcello, who got traded, and Eduardo Rodriguez, who's coming back from COVID complications. So Nathan Eovaldi is the number one on the rotation, with other players on that rotation who are huge question marks. So if any of them can become stellar pitchers, then now we've got a really good team. Are we good on time? Or
You have 36 seconds. So
36 seconds.
Say why you think they're better than the Rays specifically. Maybe.
Okay, so with the Rays, there's still question marks there with regards to their offense. Yes, they've got very good pitching. And I'll have Chuck talk more about that specifically. But I think offense, what it comes down to is offense will win the games. It just depends on, you know, whether the Red Sox can keep the Rays from scoring runs and whether the Rays will be able to let the Red Sox score runs.
Good job. Okay, so that's lots of good points, especially offensively. So Charles, how about you counter with why you think the Rays are the ones to fear in the AL East? Go ahead.
Ben, I can't believe you said that the Red Sox have the best center fielder right now with Mookie and Trout out there. First of all, I just couldn't believe it. Come on now. We got at least but, I mean, you said it. I was going to go into their pitching, and I am. You talked about offense. Well, I got defense to back it up, because the Rays are going to play the Red Sox 10 times this season, and that's a lot for a 60-game span, and you're going to need that pitching to come in. Charlie Morton, Blake Snell, Tyler Glass now, I mean, Yarbrough, all these guys. I mean, you're not going to be able to stop that starting four, let along with Trevor Richards going to come in as well. He could be a factor in that rotation. So I think that their starting pitching is definitely going to be a factor, especially because they play each team in that division 10 times. And I believe the Yankees only 9 times, which is also an advantage for the Rays because they don't have to deal with that powerhouse in the division for an extra game. So, and talk about offense, you know, I think the Rays got the best shortstop right now in Willie Adams. He's potentially a 2020 Gold Glove winner. And I think that, you know, he's coming up last year. He's a young guy. And I think he's going to make a run for an award this year. And he's going to come up and be the best shortstop in the league. I really think so. This guy is going to be one of the top players in the league this year. I don't know why Heather's shaking her head, because it's true. I don't know which shortstop you think you have in Seager, but this guy is going to beat him out this year for the Golden Glove Award. And I really think that this lineup, including Brandon Lowe, G-Man Choi, I mean, these guys are hitters as well for the Rays. And I think with Mike Zunino at the catching position, you know, these guys can really come together for a team that really hasn't seen a lot of success. Obviously, in the last 10 years, they've been rebuilding and doing a lot of different things. But I think that this could be the Rays' time right now. They have a lot of things in place. It's a shortened season. They've been staying healthy, staying working. They haven't lost really any guys except for in their outfield. Their outfield is a little depleted, but they still have Hunter Renfroe. So I think that they're going to be fine. The Rays are going to be a good team this year. And if they don't get that second spot, I don't know who will, because I think that they've got it locked in the bag.
Okay, well, you had a full minute to go, but I guess that's all. Good job, guys. I think Carlos Correa isn't a good shortstop. I think. So to answer your question, I wasn't even thinking about Corey Seager, but yeah. Okay, so now it's Sebastian and I. Sebastian will say why this is a World Series matchup that has been talked about ad nauseum in the you know, summer camp. So, and before that. So people are expecting this, and let's hear why in this hypothetical situation, the Yankees will beat out the Dodgers to win the title in 2020. Go ahead, Sebastian. You have 3 minutes, 15 seconds.
Okay, so the first thing that I do want to mention, we do have three AL East teams in here, and I feel like it would be a dishonor without mentioning a single note from either the Rays or the Red Sox as a Yankee fan. So I'm going to quickly just touch up on those before we go into the hypothetical World Series matchup between the Yankees and Dodgers. Okay. First, I think that the Rays have the best shot in the AL East and in the Eastern Division to actually beat out the Yankees for the first place finish. They are a very sleeper team. They've won 80 games in 2017. If I put my notes, then they won, I believe it was 90 games in 2018, and then it was 96 in 2019. So their wins have gone up. They finished second place or third place in the division for the past 3 years. I would not count them out right away, especially with great pitching like Charles mentioned. As for the Red Sox, Chris Sale out, Mookie Betts out, David Price out. Red Sox are barely going to finish above either the Blue Jays or the Orioles. And right now, the farm system of both the Blue Jays and the Orioles looks much more promising than anything that the Red Sox have. Ooh. Now, going into the hypothetical matchup between the Yankees and the Dodgers.
Okay, go ahead.
After last night's matchup, where Gerrit Cole was credited with a complete game, even though only he pitching five innings, Mookie Betts went 1-for-5. Now, one game, blah, blah, blah. We can talk all about that. Each team won. So, again, now we're 1-0 for both teams to start off the season. I still think that the Yankee-Dodger matchup is the most realistic for this 2020 World Series, even with an expanded playoffs. With the expanded playoffs, there may be some more difficulties in the earlier rounds as compared to the later rounds. You never know with a sleeper team such as the White Sox who might come out running from the gate, or even the Twins who might blast a ton of home runs. Sure. Even the A's are a very huge sleeper team. So there's a lot of teams that could cause trouble in this expanded playoff format. But when you really look at it, it's going to be Yankees who have Gerrit Cole, and the Dodgers who have Mookie Betts. I want to say two of the at least top five, definitely top 10 players in the MLB at the moment. If you really want to think about hypotheticals, I would have to say that the Yankees will be taking the World Series in six games. And that could be credited to the offense, but you can't talk about the Yankees without mentioning their untouchable bullpen, I guess, with Aroldis Chapman, Zach Britton, Chad Green, Jonathan Holder. And then if you include with these expanded rosters, Devi Garcia, Jonathan Loaisia, Domingo Herman right now is currently up in the air. I doubt he will even play in 2020, but possibly in 2021 and beyond. The Yankees have a lot of decent prospects, a lot of good pitching prospects, and a lot of depth that is somewhat overlooked, especially when you're talking about juggernaut like the Dodgers, who have two MVPs, a former three-time Cy Young Award winner, including Kershaw, if I believe that's correct. Walker Buehler, who's going to be very good. Julio Urias, who we haven't seen as much, but can be good. And then, of course, all these other players such as Chris Taylor, Kike Hernandez, who had a huge game last night. Corey Seager, Max Muncy, Will Smith. It's going to be a juggernaut versus a juggernaut in the World Series. Yankees Dodgers.
Okay. Well, you also had a bunch of time on the clock.
Heather's point.
That's a lot more like a Dodgers promo than a Yankees. Okay, but I'll take it. Thank you, Sebastian. Now it is my turn to counter. I'll put, this is honest, everyone, 3 minutes, 15 seconds on the clock for myself. So to respond to your point about depth, you can't say depth in Major League Baseball without talking about the Dodgers, who have, I would say, to use your word, untouchable depth. I would say that, let's see, yesterday, Joc Pederson, who hit 36 or 37 home runs last year, batted six, I believe. He would be a leadoff guy on many other teams, or maybe even batting cleanup. He's great. Kike, who we don't even talk about very much because he's more a utility guy, went 4-for-5 yesterday with 5 RBIs, I believe. So yeah, I mean, when you talk about depth, and it's on the pitching side too, I forgot about Brewster Gratterall until he pitched that 9th. And he's electric. We got him this year. We didn't even see Joe Kelly, who unfortunately for us sort of was a disappointment at times last year. And of course the starting rotation, I could say, goes 8 players deep, if necessary. As we saw yesterday, Dustin May got the call 48 hours. He's 22 before number 22 went on the injured list, and he pitched a 1-run game. It wasn't even his best. He did allow some hard contact. So we haven't even scratched the surface, I don't think, with the young guys. There's Tony Gonsolin. But I think for the sake of this year, I think that depth will really play on every team, because you might see COVID testing positive. You might see some injuries, and in the 60-game sprints, you really need everybody to be their best. So I think the Dodgers will be healthiest going into the postseason than they've been in a long time, because they have the luxury of not overworking players, as some would argue that they have done in the past. I think Dave Roberts, who we haven't talked about managers a lot, has learned a lot from his experience in the postseason this past 5 or so years. And I think that in a matchup, you know, we talk about Garrett Cole a bunch. Hello, Walker Buehler, younger and also an electric arm. So in terms of ace versus ace, that'll be an interesting matchup if we do see that. But I also believe that pitching top to bottom is stronger, especially because Luis Severino is out for this year. I think that's a huge loss for the Yankees. And I think Corey Seager being back at full health will be a huge sneaky thing that nobody sees. And who could talk about the Dodgers without? We have two MVPs, Cody Bellinger, Mookie Betts. They're going to be huge. They didn't have huge games yesterday, but it was game one. Let them warm up a little bit. I think they'll be huge. They'll put up huge numbers. I think Mookie Betts is a maybe not even sneaky MVP vote for this year. So I think the Dodgers, needless to say, will hold their own against the Yankees. I think that it's their time. I just want to put this, I have 11 seconds, so I don't have time. I just want to say quickly that 1981 season was a shortened season. A rookie by the name of Fernando Valenzuela pitched game one, and they won the World Series. I ran out of time. They won the World Series that year. Yesterday, a rookie, Dustin May, pitched opening day, and it's a shortened season. What does that mean?
We got to cut it. We got
to
cut it.
No, I would like to make one closing argument against Joc Pederson. I have heard the argument of Josh Peterson being a great hitter or a great leadoff batter anywhere else except for LA with that load lineup. And I just want to say that that is complete garbage. Josh Peterson is a career 233 batter. If anything, his home run totals every year barely outweigh his lack of batting average. His on-base percentage, career 339, I believe, is respectable. But I would not ever, ever consider putting Josh Peterson in the first in the leadoff hole with his career batting average and on-base percentage. If that guy's a power hitter, which he is, you put him in the sixth hole and let him swing away. He's going to have too many Ks to be your leadoff guy. That's it. That's all I want to say.
What about you, Ben? Anything else you want to add? We got to wrap it up here.
Yeah. I actually, just going back to your point, Chuck, about Willie Adams being like best shortstop maybe in the league. I mean, in the Rays system, they've got Wander Franco coming up. Where do you think he's going to – do you think Wander Franco is going to become the shortstop, or do you think he's going to move over?
No, I think DeFranco might be moved over to second. It all depends on what happens over there. But I think that Adams is just way too good right now. He had a great season last year. He played almost 160 games. So he's a reliable guy who will stay in their offense. And I don't think he's not going anywhere right now.
Yeah.
And since I, too, get a closing statement, I will say that it'll be fun postseason. I am a little worried about this three-game best of three situation that will be the first round. I don't like it. It's not fair that a 100-plus win team such as the Dodgers or Yankees, maybe even the Rays, not the Red Sox, sorry, Ben, will have to play, you know, maybe a team under 500 and possibly lose. I don't like that. They work too hard. That would be in a full season, but we'll see how it goes for this season. And I'm excited, and I hope that the Dodgers finally take it on. I get to see a World Series before I die. Thank you.
It happens, guys. Thanks for joining. All talk, no balk, and your take, our take. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you, guys. Thanks. It was awesome.
Thanks for having us on.
Take care.
But if you close your eyes.
All right, everyone, that's a wrap. That's another episode of All Talk No Balk. Episode 4 is in the books. We are so excited that you guys joined us this week, and we're even more excited for our topic for your take, our take next week. Charles, you want to give it to us?
We're going to be talking about things that annoy you in the MLB, dropping one thing, and things that you are looking forward to once the season really gets back next year and we're allowing fans in the stands, hopefully. One thing you're looking forward to getting back to baseball.
Yes, we're it'll be a fun topic, and we have some special new guests, so stay tuned for that. But we are so grateful to have two returning guests on this week, and we want to thank again Ben and Sebastian for being friends of the pod and for coming back and for bringing up such lovely points. It was much more civil than I thought it would be, especially on my side, but it was a really nice debate, so we thank them once again. And we just want to say thank you, everyone. You follow us, all the info will be at the end of this video. So you can follow us, call us, email us, the whole thing, you know, the usual. So thank you for watching, and we'll see you guys next week. Bye, everyone.
Bye, guys.
How am I gonna be an optimist about this? If you close your eyes.